This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Welcome to the Journal of Neurosurgery podcast for January 14th, 2011. I'm Natalie Pynchon. I will be reading a summary of some of the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery today. Topics of the articles in this podcast are vascular disorders, oncology, functional neurosurgery, and hydrocephalus. Persistent fetal intracranial arteries, a comprehensive review of anatomical and clinical significance. A review article by R. Shane Tubbs and colleagues. Intracranial fetal arteries are named for their relationship to the trigeminal ganglion, otic vesicle, hypoglossal nerve, and dorsal aorta, respectively. Interestingly, no thorough review of these structures and their potential persistence into adulthood is found in the current literature. Therefore, the authors performed the present study. In the fetus, these arteries serve as transitory anastomoses between the developing internal carotid arteries and the bilateral longitudinal neural arterial plexus, with the latter being a precursor of the future basilar artery. Rarely, these vessels may persist outside of uterine development and may complicate neurosurgical procedures or act as pathological entities. The incidence of these persistent vessels, in descending order, is the trigeminal, hypoglossal, proatlantal, and otic arteries. On occasion, these vessels may be important as collateral circulatory pathways in patients with carotid or vertebrobasilar stenosis. The authors state that it is important that clinicians who view images of the cranium or neurosurgeons who perform intracranial procedures have a good knowledge of the anatomy and variations of these persistent fetal vessels. Based on the author's review, there are conflicting data in the literature as to whether or not these structures are found at a greater incidence in patients with intracranial aneurysms. Impact of temozolomide chemotherapy on seizure frequency in patients with low-grade gliomas, a clinical article by Jonathan Sherman and co-authors. Epileptic seizures are commonly seen in patients with gliomas and are often refractory to medical management. In addition, multiple anti-epileptic medications are required to control seizure activity, and these drugs may interact with the patient's chemotherapeutic regimen. The severity of seizures also correlates with a decrease in executive functioning and working memory capacity. The authors searched the University of Virginia Health System's clinical database between 2002 and 2007 to study the impact of temozolomide chemotherapy on seizure frequency in patients with low-grade gliomas. As a control, they analyzed the natural history of seizures in this patient population, managed by surveillance MR imaging alone. Meaningful improvement was defined as a reduction in seizure frequency by greater than 50% between clinic visits. The total patient population included 39 patients in the study cohort and 30 patients in the control cohort. The median age at diagnosis was 46 years in the study cohort and 41.5 years in the control cohort. 59% of patients receiving temozolomide had reduced seizure frequency versus 13% of patients in the control cohort. 18% of patients in the temozolomide group displayed significant improvement in seizure frequency independent of antiepileptic drug adjustment, as compared with no patient in the control group. The authors conclude that temozolomide chemotherapy appears to lower seizure frequency in a subset of patients with low-grade gliomas and may be useful in helping to control seizures in this patient population. Transcranial magnetic stimulation and extradural electrodes implanted on secondary auditory cortex for tinnitus suppression. A clinical article by Dr. Ridder and co-workers. Tinnitus is a prevalent symptom with clinical, pathophysiological, and treatment features analogous to pain. Non-invasive transcranial magnetic stimulation, or TMS, and intracranial auditory cortex stimulation via implanted electrodes into the primary or overlying the secondary auditory cortex have been developed to treat severe cases of intractable tinnitus. A series of 43 patients who benefited transiently from two separate placebo-controlled TMS sessions underwent implantation of auditory cortex electrodes. Targeting was based on blood oxygen level dependent activation evoked by tinnitus-matched sound using functional MR imaging-guided neuronavigation. When classic tonic stimulation was used, one-third of the patients benefited from the implant. Using a recently developed burst stimulation design combined with complex programming, the success rate was increased to approximately two-thirds of the patients. In the patients who responded, approximately 20% perceived almost no tinnitus anymore, and 45% of patients had tinnitus suppression of 50%. 35% of patients had no improvement, even though all patients benefited transiently from TMS. Burst stimulation suppressed tinnitus in more patients and was better than tonic stimulation, especially for noise-like tinnitus. For pure tone tinnitus, there were no differences between the two stimulation designs. Auditory cortex implants might become a valuable treatment option for severe intractable tinnitus. Better understanding of the pathophysiological mechanisms of tinnitus, predictive functional imaging tests, new stimulation designs, and other stimulation targets are needed to improve results. Shunt surgery in patients with hydrocephalus and white matter changes. A clinical article by Magnus Tizzle and colleagues. In this randomized, placebo-controlled, double-blind study, the authors found that patients with hydrocephalus and white matter changes benefit from shunt surgery. They had previously observed that patients with hydrocephalic symptoms and ventricular enlargement improve after shunt surgery despite extensive white matter lesions. 14 patients fulfilling these criteria were randomized to shunt surgery with either an open or a ligated ventriculoperitoneal shunt with a pressure setting of 5.1 millimeters of mercury. After 3 months, the patients with closed shunts had their retroauricular wounds opened and the clip removed, whereas those with an open shunt underwent a sham opening. Patient clinical performances were evaluated before surgery, at the 3-month follow-up, and at the 6-month follow-up when all shunts were open. The clinical evaluation included 7 quantitative psychometric and 6 continuous gait tests. The patients randomized to open shunts had improved motor and psychometric scores after 3 months. There were no significant changes between 3 and 6 months of follow-up. Conversely, patients with initially ligated shunts were unchanged during the first 3-month period, but improved in both motor and cognitive functions after removal of the ligature. Thank you for listening to the Journal of Neurosurgery. To listen to more of our podcasts, please visit us at thejns.org. You can also follow the JNS on Twitter.